Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing tonight? Thanks for tuning in. Sarah Palin was interviewed by Channel 9 News, KUSA, in Colorado yesterday. And I want you to hear this right at the beginning of the program. Then we'll come back to a little bit later. The local NBC affiliate there, Channel 9 in Colorado, is who interviewed her, one of the local anchor people. She doesn't do network interviews. She did for CNN, and if you saw some of that today, well, anyway, so she's in Colorado and does this interview. After one of her infamous Hour of Hate rallies in Colorado Springs. And at one point, the interviewer for Channel 9, the NBC affiliate, asked her questions submitted by their viewers, including one from a third grader. The third grader is named Brandon Garcia, and he wants to know, Governor Palin, what does the vice president do?
That's something that Piper would ask me as a second grader also. That's a great question, Brandon, and a vice president has a really great job because not only are they there to support the president's agenda, they're like the team member, the teammate to that president, but also they're in charge of the United States Senate. So if they want to, they can really get in there with the senators and make a lot of good policy changes that will make life better for Brandon and his family and his classroom, and it's a great job, and I look forward to having that job.
Thank you so much for being on your show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
No. That's not. The vice president, Sarah, serves as president of the Senate, and if the Senate gets deadlocked, he or she may cast a tie-breaking vote. But the formal powers and the role of the vice president, both are limited by the Constitution to becoming president should the president himself become unable to serve, like death or resignation or medical impairment. He's the presiding officer of the Senate. And his only duties are to cast a vote in the event of a Senate deadlock, and to preside over and certify the official vote count of the U.S. Electoral College. Now, that's at Wikipedia, Sarah, and it's written in simple sentences. There are no compound sentences. Well, okay, there's a couple with compound subjects, but you can handle it. You can handle it. Jesus God, what did she say? She said they're in charge of the U.S. Senate, so if they want, they can get in there with the senators and make a lot of good policy changes? No, Sarah, the vice president can't do that at all. As a matter of fact, the vice president really presides over the Senate to begin with. In his place, the Senate chooses what they call a president pro tempore, or president for a time, to preside. That's why, Sarah, if you tune into C-SPAN, where they're covering Senate procedure or Senate activity, and you'll see one of the senators stand up and say, Madam President or Mr. President, and he's looking at the podium, that's because the person up there is the president pro tempore. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay. That's the hoe from Wasilla, who is being pimped by John McCain to America. And she doesn't know. It's at Wikipedia, Sarah. Was somebody, some of you right-wingers who listen to this program who contribute to the McCain-Palin campaign, send an email and tell Sarah to go to Wikipedia and type in vice president. That's all she has to do. Hey, did you see this story? This is kind of creepy. An American fighter pilot during the height of the Cold War was flying from an English air base. And he was ordered to open fire on a massive unidentified flying object, a UFO, that had lighted up his radar screen. That's according to an account published yesterday by Britain's National Archives. The pilot said he had been ordered to fire a full salvo of rockets at the UFO, which was moving erratically over the North Sea. And at the last minute, this object that he had on his radar screen picked up speed that the pilot had never seen before and disappeared from his radar. This unnamed pilot said he and another airman were sent on the night of May 20th, 1957, to intercept this object, which had been picked up on radar at the Royal Air Force Station on the southeastern tip of England. According to a typed manuscript of his account, mailed to Britain's Ministry of Defense, he said, quote, "This was a flying object with very unusual flight patterns," end quote. The retired, retired American pilot, Milton Torres, told Britain Sky News from Miami that he was the pilot and that he had spent 50 frustrating years trying to uncover the truth of that encounter. Mr. Torres, the American pilot, said he never saw the UFO directly but watched in awe as it appeared on his jet's radar screen and then sped off before he could fire. He said, quote, "I had not the foggiest idea what had actually occurred, nor would anyone explain anything to me," end quote. And after returning to the base, he said he was led to a man in civilian clothes who, quote, "advised me that this would be considered highly classified and that I should not discuss it with anybody," end quote. 1957, huh? Well, what was that, 51 years ago? Figure the guy was probably, what, 24? So he's around 75 now? Ah, it's delusions, right? Didn't happen! Don't you wish you knew the truth of UFOs? Oh, Art Bell, Art Bell! No, just kidding. All right, something I want to share with you here. It's very quick. Simon Critchley is the chair of philosophy at the New School in New York City. His most recent work is forthcoming from Vintage Books. It's called The Book of Dead Philosophers. And I just want to share with you a couple of sentences here from remarks he delivered at the American Political Science Association in Boston on August 30th and at the New School in New York City on September 18th. Here's what he said. "There's something desperately lonely about Barack Obama's universe. One gets the overwhelming sense of someone yearning for connection, for something that binds human beings together, for community and commonality, for what he repeatedly calls the common good." Of course, this is hardly news. We've known since his keynote speech at the 2004 Democratic National Convention that, quote, "There's not a black American, a white America, a Latino American, Asian America. There's the United States of America," end quote. Obama's remedy to the widespread disillusion with politics in the U.S. is a reaffirmation of the act of union. This is possible only insofar as we restore a sense of community to the nation. That, in turn, requires a belief in the common good. In the face of grotesque inequality, governmental sleaze, and generalized enemy, we need to affirm our bonds with one another, as Obama said. Belief in the common good is the sole basis for hope. Without belief, there is nothing to be done. Such is the avowedly improbable basis for Obama's entire push for the presidency. Yeah, and the larger article, it's in the current issue of Harper's. And if you subscribe to Harper's, you probably have already read it. But I just thought that first paragraph so clearly described Barack Obama. The way the Republicans are, McCain and these groups and Palin are trying to describe and define Barack Obama is so grotesque. I mean, he is what he is, but he genuinely is someone who believes, Let's set aside his political belief or his belief in continuing a war in Afghanistan or let's just step outside the political realm with this guy for just a minute. He really has a chance to be a philosopher president, doesn't he? He really does believe in the common good, the common connection, the necessity of connecting with one another. Wow. In a way, that's just monumentally sad, isn't it? Maybe some suggestions, and I bet they're gonna ask me about man's insanity. You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere, and you better clean your waters up, or have none for your cup.
Men and women, our leaders, our national leaders, are sending them out on a task that is from God. Bless them with your prayers.
Twenty-two past the hour. Oh, by the way, in that interview with Channel 9 in Colorado Springs yesterday, the interviewer also had a question for the Ho from Wasilla. The question was, what Democrats might one find in a McCain-Palin administration? For example, the guy who was Secretary of Defense for Clinton was a Republican, Cohen. I forget his name. Richard Cohen? Was it? No, he's a writer. Anyway, the question was put to Sarah. What Democrats might one find in a McCain-Palin administration?
Lieberman, he is so great. He is so independent. Reminds me a lot of John McCain also. That independent spirit that is within them, they do not let obsessive partisanship get in the way of just doing what's right for the people they're serving.
Obsessive partisanship?
And Governor, look at my cabinet. I've got Republicans. I've got a Democrat who is our Commissioner of Revenue. I have hired Democrats, Independents, Republicans to best serve us as a team up there in Alaska, and on a national level we would do the same thing, looking for people who have the heart of America in mind, have a servant's heart, and have strong work ethic and
good judgment, good values
so that they can best be implemented to put government back on the side of the people of America.
God, she turns my stomach. She just makes me want to toss the barbecued pork I had tonight for dinner. I can't stand her inflection. I can't stand her look. I can't stand her ignorance. I can't stand her snake handling religion. God, I don't like this person.
But she really makes a great Halloween costume, Mike. You just got to admit, it's just wonderful for me. It's Sarah Palin's been one of the most fun things that's happened to me all summer.
I think we got time for this. The interview at Channel 9, KUSA, then asked her about why voters should support the McCain economic plan over Barack Obama's plan. Listen as Palin here, shrouding herself in the guise of Joe the Plumber, accuses Obama of being a socialist. The interview asked a question from a viewer who was out of work and wanted to ask Governor Palin, why should the viewer put his trust in the McCain-Palin ticket?
Because we're going to create jobs, and voters will have that very clear choice between the two tickets. To support a ticket, ours, that supports policies to reduce taxes, allow our small businesses to keep more of what they produce and earn so that they can hire more people. That's how he's going to get that shot at getting another job, a better job, versus the other ticket that wants to take more money from our individuals and our small businesses and then redistribute that money, that wealth, according to a politician's priorities. That was Barack Obama's answer to Joe the Plumber the other night, was he wants to take more of his money and give it to other people according to his priorities. And Joe the Plumber said, that's sounds a little bit like socialism to him.
Jesus Christ, I hate this woman. She turns my stomach. None of what she said is true. None of it. And I'm not going to sit here and rebut it point by point. But I can't get my mind around, not completely around, the fact that someone this goddamn stupid, just flat out stupid, is thinking she's going to become Vice President of the United States. And you know what? There are enough knuckle-dragging, brain-dead religious freaks in this country, coupled with totally, willfully ignorant Republicans, to do just that. Put her in office. That's where we are. I cannot believe. This just makes me want to scream. As a matter of fact, during the commercial here, I'm going to do that. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Don't want none unless you got buns, hun. You can do side bends or sit-ups, but please don't lose that butt. Some brothers want to play that hard role and tell you that the butt ain't gold, so they toss it and leave it, and I pull up quick to retrieve it. So Cosmo says you're fat. Well, I ain't down with that, because your waist is small and your curves are kicking, and I'm thinking about sticking to the beanpole dames in the magazines. You ain't it, Miss Thing. Give me a sister, I can't resist her. Red beans and rice didn't miss her. Some knucklehead tried to diss, because his girls are on my list. He had game, but he chose to hit him, and I pull up quick to get with him. So ladies, if the butt is round and you want a triple X throwdown, dial 1-900-MIX-A-LOT and kick them nasty thoughts. Baby got back.
What comes from this church, I think, has great destiny. You guys are all a bunch of cool Christians also. I just want to bless you with...
They like to move it, move it. You like to move it, move it. 3, 2, 1. Goodbye to you. Come on.
It's about 25 before the hour. I don't know where else this is breaking, but the Republican National Committee, it appears, they spent more than $150,000 to buy clothing and accessories for Palin and her family since McCain decided to pimp her to the American public and the Christian right. According to financial disclosure records, the accessorizing began in early September. Included bills from Saks Fifth Avenue in St. Louis and New York for a combined total there of just under $50,000. The records also document a couple of big-time shopping trips to Neiman's in Minneapolis, including one $75,000 spree in early September. The Republican National Committee also spent just under $5,000 on hair and makeup for Palin through September. Politico.com, which I believe is breaking the story, asked the McCain campaign for comment, explicitly noting that the $150,000 in expenses for department store shopping and makeup consultation that were incurred immediately after Palin's announcement, pre-September reports don't include similar costs. So a spokeswoman for the RNC, Maria Comella, decided to decline to answer specific questions about the expenditures, including whether it was necessary to spend that much and whether more shopping for Palin was in the offing. The spokeswoman for the RNC says, Maria Comella is Cornella. Is with the McCain campaign. She said the campaign does not comment on strategic decisions regarding how financial resources available to the campaign are spent. Now, let's see. In 2000, Al Gore took an awful lot of smarmy sucky comments from Limbaugh and the rest of the bastards because he changed the color of his clothes. A couple of years ago, Hillary Clinton was sliced and diced for two hair styling sessions that cost under $3,000. And then, of course, John Edwards' $400 haircuts the last year. McCain's $520 black leather Ferragamo shoes this year. $150,000? Holy Jesus. Also, Barney's in New York. Just under $800. Bloomingdale's in New York. $5,000. Macy's in Minneapolis. Just under $10,000. The entries also show a few purchases at Pacifier, a top-notch baby store. Also, just under $5,000 was spent at Atelier, high-class shopping destination for men. For men? You mean the first dude got $5,000 worth of duds at Atelier? Really? We have one of those here in Atlanta. Sometimes I go to that store and press my face up against the window and look in until they drive me away. Get out of here! Okay. From the Republican political front, this is sent to me. This came from Crooks and Liars. This is from Miami with McCain down there. McCain's rumble through Florida. A woman named America Blanca, 44-year-old small business owner from Miami, who wore a red dress and was visibly pumped by the rally. She said, quote, "I don't believe these polls, not one of them, because it's the kids answering the polls on the computers. That's who it is. Their parents are not home. And they're answering, and they will not be voting. I think if McCain is losing, it's only by a little spread, very little." She held the tip of her pointer finger about 2 inches from the tip of her thumb. Asked if her business made more than $250,000 a year, the cap under which Obama has proposed cutting taxes, she said it did make under $250,000. Told about Obama's proposal, she answered, "I don't give a blank. I will never vote for a black man." Jeff Shep, head of the National Socialist Movement here, says the government classifies his group as a domestic group of interest, not domestic terrorists. The FBI won't comment. Shep says interest in his group has really spiked up. He wouldn't say by how much. He says, quote, "Historically, when times get tough in our nation, that's how movements like ours gain a foothold. When the economy suffers, people are looking for answers, and we are the answer for white people." End quote. And then from Cullowhee, North Carolina, a dead bear was found dumped this morning on the Western Carolina University campus, draped with a pair of Obama campaign signs, according to university police. Maintenance workers reported finding a 75-pound bear cub dumped at the roundabout near the statue at the entrance to the campus. The chief of university police said, quote, "It looked like it had been shot in the head, as best as we can tell. A couple of Obama campaign signs had been stapled together and stuck over its head." End quote. From Baltimore writes, "Hello, Mike. Why does Sarah Palin and John McCain hate Jesus? They're running around spreading the fear of socialism to their nutcase base. Oh, my God, Obama wants to spread the wealth around. What would Jesus do? He would spread the wealth around. Jesus hated hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is what McCain, Palin, all Republicans, and religious right-wing nuts are all about. We are seeing mass hypocrisy from these anti-Jesus freaks who pretend every day of their lives that they believe in God and the Holy Bible. They have eyes, but they can't see, nor can they read. They love their Bible and love to tell others how to live. Hypocrisy. All I would say to McCain and Palin on this socialism and spreading the wealth around is, why do you hate Jesus? Don in Baltimore. Maybe we should talk to the owners of this network, Kathy, and take an extended leave of absence. I don't know, man. I feel like an utter clown in here at night, trying to, in my way, trying to find something that makes sense out of this. I really do. Roswell, New Mexico. Vice President candidate Sarah Palin introduces Ed the Dairyman. Did you see this one? Ed the Dairyman. She spoke to a crowd of about 10,000 supporters Sunday in a Roswell, New Mexico airplane hangar, not only making a reference to Joe the Plumber, but alluding several times to Ed the Dairyman after seeing someone in the crowd holding a sign identifying himself that way. She warned voters about Democratic plans to raise taxes on America's hardworking families and our small businesses, and a lot of folks just like Joe the Plumber and Ed the Dairyman out there. She said Barack Obama's plan would expand government and destroy jobs by redistributing I'm starting to talk like her, wealth. Barack Obama calls it spreading the wealth. Joe Biden calls higher taxes patriotic, Palin said. But Joe the Plumber and Ed the Dairyman, I believe they think it sounds more like socialism. Friends, now's no time to experiment with socialism, she told the cheering crowd. She called for drilling in the U.S. to reduce dependence on foreign oil. She said, our opponents keep saying no, no, no to sound and responsible energy solutions. Drilling in New Mexico and elsewhere can be an economic engine to provide jobs. She drew cheers from the crowd when she said, we'll drill here. We'll drill now. And they cheered her. In an interview with the Christian Broadcasting Network, Palin says she supports the constitutional amendment banning gay marriage, which is not what John McCain said he believes in. He says he believes states should be left to define what marriage is. In an interview with Christian Broadcasting Network, Palin said she had voted in 1998 for a state amendment banning same-sex marriage and hoped to see a federal ban on such unions. She said something else, too, I'll share with you when we come back. I'm Mike Mola. This is Novan.
State of Alaska. Let us pray for God's will to be done here. A praying for an outpouring of God's Spirit here, that revival to be here in Alaska.
Yeah, and give us an oil pipeline. And Palin, interviewed on the Christian Broadcasting Network, says she's in favor of the constitutional amendment. A goddamn constitutional amendment. Think about it. To stop gay folk from getting married. a constitutional amendment. You know, right up there with the right not to involve oneself in self-incriminate. Oh, wait, that's gone. The First Amendment, the right to freedom of speech and religion and, oh, wait, that's pretty much gone. A constitutional amendment. All of that just to stop the queers from getting married? Palin also claimed that religion and God had been mocked, her word, during the campaign, although she offered no evidence to support that. She said to the freaks at CBN, faith in God in general has been mocked through this campaign, only by me, Sarah. And that breaks my heart, and that is unfair for others who share a faith in God and choose to worship our Lord in whatever private manner that they deem fit. Private manner? No. There's no privacy. What are you talking about, private? What the hell are you talking about, psycho woman? Private? Oh, no. Back in September, Barack Obama defended Palin's religious beliefs and said it would be offensive to portray her faith as strange or wrong. Well, I'm obviously not Barack Obama. I think she's a goddamn nutcase where it concerns this weird, sick religion she believes in. Palin also, in this interview, reaffirmed her her statement that Obama has been palling around with terrorists because of his association with Bill Ayers. She said, I said it, and I'll say it again. Oh, I can't think of anyone I have met in my entire life who so irritated me. Huh? In the meantime, she cheats and lies. This is a Christian? No. This is a lying, stinking skank who will cheat, lie. She charged the state of Alaska for her children to travel with her, including to events where they were not invited. And later, she forged her expense reports to specify that they were on official business. The charges included costs for hotel and commercial flights for her three daughters, to watch their father in a snowmobile race, a trip to New York, where the governor attended a five-hour conference and stayed with 17-year-old daughter for 5 days and four nights in a luxury hotel. In all, the hoe from Wasilla has charged the state of Alaska $21,000 for her three daughters, one-way and round-trip commercial flights since she took office in December 2006. In other cases, she has charged the state for hotel rooms for the girls. It just goes on and on and on and on and on, huh? You know, if there really was a Jesus or a God would reach down with his mighty hand and pinch her head off. Snip. Yes, he would. You know he would. Because I think somewhere in the Bible it talks about the lowest spot in hell is for hypocrites. Or is that Dante? It's either Dante or God. One of the two. The hottest spot in hell reserved for hypocrites. What else? From our economics correspondent. Mike, French President Nicolas Sarkozy came to Washington last week and told Bush that Bush, was going to host an economic conference to retool the 64-year-old Bretton Woods Agreement. In the closing days of World War II, this is what established the U.S. as the dominant force in world trade and banking. The agreement created the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, and it originally created a gold standard for the trading of currency. Nixon scuttled the gold standard in 1971. I thought it was the silver. I thought he took the dollar off of silver. Prairie two. I'm not sure. Nixon scuttled the gold standard in 1971 as he wanted to continue borrowing for the Vietnam War and needed to inflate the dollar to cover the debt. This, of course, caused runaway inflation during the Carter administration, leading directly into the Reagan crime organization and 28 years of voodoo economics. The question is, why do the Europeans want to negotiate with Bush instead of Obama? The answer is that the prime ministers of the bigger European countries are just as much national socialists as Bush is. There is talk of Congress reconvening at the same time. It's very possible the Republicans are planning to saddle us with some awful agreement while they can. And if we're not paying attention, we're going to get national socialism, even if we win the election. Yeah, well, I tend to think it's a done deal already. You know, when Palin and McCain talked to their magnificently stupid and ignorant audiences about Barack Obama, because he used the phrase about spread the wealth a little bit, he wants to be he's a socialist. And I wonder, do these people not understand what Paulson and Bernanke have done? Do they not understand, these dumb bastards, that the Bush crime family just used socialism to bail out, to the tune of $2 or $3 or $4 trillion, the financial industry in this country that was running a Ponzi scheme, a casino? And these dumb bastards stand there and applaud. No, no socialism for you, dumb bastards. No socialized medicine. No, nothing. No. Don't you understand, you stupid people? Oh, Jesus. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Muller. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. A couple of people have asked, hey, Mike, what happened to the uncensored mailbag? We are, apparently I had my spam filter set too high. we made some adjustments the other night. Sure enough, we snagged a couple. So we're going to probably do Malloy's uncensored mailbag this evening. Are we going to do it this evening? Or tomorrow morning? Okay, it'll be up sometime, I think, by tomorrow afternoon. So for the people who've been writing in about that, yeah, it's coming. It's coming. My bad. And for those of you who don't know what the hell I'm talking about, if you're a Nova M subscriber or founding member, however you want to put it, $10 a month or $100 a year, you have access to Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag. You think this program gets potty mouth when we're live on the air? You ought to become a subscriber and check out, well, what I do. It's not me cursing. I just read what some of these half-witted morons send to me, thinking that they're being, oh, so cool. Let's write Malloy a letter and call him an MF-er. Yeah, okay. Oh, God. So anyway, it'll be back. It'll be back by tomorrow. All right. Oh, did you hear what happened in Cuba the other day? The way the Guardian of the UK puts it, Mother Nature, it emerged last week, appears to have blessed Cuba with enough oil reserves to vault it into the ranks of energy powers. The government there announced there may be more than 20 billion barrels of recoverable oil in offshore fields in Cuba's share of the Gulf of Mexico. If confirmed, that puts Cuba's reserves on par with those of the United States and into the world's top 20. Drilling is expected to start next year. by Cuba's state oil company, Cuba Petroleo, or CUPET. Kirby Jones, founder of the Washington-based U.S.-Cuba Trade Association, said, quote, it could change their whole equation. The government would have more money and no longer be dependent on foreign oil. He went on to say, or the exploration manager of the Cuba oil company said, we have more data. I'm almost certain that if they ask for all the data we have, the estimate is going to grow considerably. Well, isn't that nice? I mean, it's not nice in terms of more global warming, but that's pretty much an issue that nobody's going to do anything about. So, you know, just stop having grandchildren, I guess. But isn't that nice for Cuba? A consortium of companies led by Spain's Repsol had tested wells and were expected to begin drilling the first production well in mid-2009. Cuba currently produces about 60,000 barrels of oil daily, covering almost half of its needs, and imports the rest from Venezuela in return for Cuban doctors and sports instruction. Blah, 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 blah. It just goes on about the horrible situation in Cuba, thanks to the United States sanctioning that poor country since, what, 1959? Jesus Christ. But China? Oh, yeah, China's okay. Let's do business with the Chinese. You know, they mow down their own citizens at Tiananmen. Oh, never mind. Never mind. All right. We want to do some phone calls tonight because, but you got to be good. You got to be good. Ian is going to screen the calls very closely. I've been going on and on and on and on most nights here, and I just feel like we haven't really gotten a sense of what our 37 listeners are all about. I do have coming up at the bottom of the hour a moment with Bob. And that's about it for the rest of the show. It's going to be your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. So consider checking in tonight if you like. I started reading something the other night. What poor, how you define poor, being poor, written by John Scalzi. It was written some time ago, but it doesn't make any difference. Here's some more. Being poor is a bathtub you have to empty into the toilet. Being poor is stopping the car to take a lamp from a stranger's trash. Being poor is believing a GED actually makes a difference. Being poor is people angry at you for just walking around in the mall. Being poor is not taking the job because you can't find someone you trust to watch your kids. Being poor is the police busting into the apartment right next to yours. Being poor is not talking to that girl because she'll probably just laugh at your clothes. Being poor is a sidewalk with lots of brown glass on it. Being poor is people thinking they know something about you by the way you talk. Being poor is actually needing that 35-cent raise. Being poor is your kid's teacher, assuming you don't have any books in your home. Being poor is $6 short on the utility bill and no way to close the gap. Being poor is crying when you drop the mac and cheese on the floor. Being poor is knowing you work as hard as anyone, anywhere. Being poor is people surprised to discover you're not actually stupid. Being poor is people surprised to discover you're not actually lazy. Being poor is a six-hour wait in an emergency room with a sick child asleep on your lap. Being poor is never buying anything someone else hasn't bought first. Being poor is picking the 10-cent package of ramen noodles instead of the 12-cent ramen noodle pack because that's two extra packages for every dollar. Being poor is a box of crayons and a $1 coloring book from a community center Santa. Being poor is checking the coin return slot of every soda machine you go by. Being poor is hoping the register lady will go ahead and spot you the dime. Being poor is a cough that doesn't go away. Being poor is making sure you don't spill on the couch just in case you have to give it back before the lease is up. Being poor is a $200 paycheck advance from a company that takes $250 when the paycheck comes in. Being poor is a lumpy futon bed. Being poor is knowing where the shelter is. Being poor is knowing how hard it is to stop being poor. Being poor is seeing how few options you have. And being poor is running in place. And being poor is people wondering why you didn't leave. Boy, you can add some to that too, right? Boy, you know, when I started reading this the other day, I thought, oh my God, could I add some things to that? Lord have mercy. We were so poor when I was a kid growing up. We really were. Just some of the stories I've told Kathy, and of course Kathy is always has been solidly middle class. But
yeah, some of your childhood memories are something straight out of the bleakest, darkest corners of Dickens' imagination. You know, nailing branches together and calling it a Christmas tree, and wrapping up your old toys to give to each other, and all of you crowded up in an attic and stealing potato chips from the factory next door. I mean, Dickens couldn't have imagined it.
Yeah, well, my favorite was the one with the preacher. I think I told you. I'll tell that one tonight when we come back. Quick break here. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Phone number again if you want to get in on the program tonight, 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Trade as opportunity, not as a scary thing.
21 past the hour. Yeah, just one quick story about poor. You know, when I read a list of things that where you know you're poor, I had two. One was when I was a freshman in high school, and going over to a girl's house that I thought was so cool, and when I went into her house, her mother had a real light beige carpet, wall-to-wall carpet. And she asked me to take off my shoes, and I knew I couldn't because I had holes in the socks. So I had to say, oops, what time is it, Mrs. Harris? Oh, well, I have to go. But my favorite Mike Malloy story about being poor, when I was a young teenager, 12, 13, 14, 15, until I left home at 16, I was pretty active, as were my two brothers and sister, in our United Methodist Church. So much so that there was an effort made by the minister of that church to, he said, the board of deacons had gotten together and decided that I had the ability to become a minister. They were going to send me to seminary. And they informed me this when I was 15. You know, when I graduated high school, they would send me. And I had to tell them, no, no thanks. I really am not. But I was in the choir, and I was head of, for 1 year, I was president of the Youth Fellowship, Methodist Youth Fellowship Organization, Protestant equivalent of CYO. You Catholics know what I'm talking about. But anyway, pretty active in the church, as were my brothers and sister. So every, well, I don't know about every Christmas, but this one Christmas, we were in Sunday services, and the preacher said from the pulpit, you know, he mentioned about the food drive for poor families that was coming up. And see, we lived in the inner city, and the church at one time had been in the inner city, but they had built a suburban church, and they sent a yellow church bus into us who were still in the inner city to pick us up every Sunday. There were probably, you know, maybe 30 of us, mostly kids, who still lived, you know, had not escaped to the suburbs where the church was. You've seen churches do that. They maintain some of their membership. The members have cars. And you know, this is back in the 50s. So anyway, they sent this bus into town every Sunday morning to pick us up. That's how we ghetto dwellers got out to the suburban, nice new, brand new suburban house of worship. So on this one Sunday, Reverend Jones, that was his name, he was talking about the drive for Christmas. People should bring canned goods and non-perishables and all kinds of stuff, like the kind of stuff when I was in elementary school we used to send to the starving children in Europe in our little care packages, you know, toothpaste and collapsible or folding combs and toothbrushes and stuff like that. So as poor as we were, my mother made sure that we four kids on the designated day were able to take to church with us. I think my sister Jean probably took a couple of cans of corn, and I took a couple of cans of tuna fish. My brother Pat, maybe some Franco-American spaghetti, and my brother Danny, maybe some of that horrifying canned Chinese food. So we took it all to church. And a huge mountain of canned goods and non-perishables in the church vestibule that Sunday morning. So, like good Christians, we were all very happy that you know, we had made such a massive contribution. Well, about 4 days later, during the week, I guess on a Wednesday or a Thursday, late afternoon, I had just gotten home from school. And I was sitting on the front porch. I lived in a three-story walk-up around behind the house, an apartment that had been an attic. And I was sitting down in front. All of a sudden, Reverend Jones pulled up in his Ford station wagon. And he opened the back door of the Ford station wagon. And I went out to the curb. And I said, "Hi, Reverend Jones." You know, you never see your preacher unless it's in church. I said, "Hi, Reverend Jones." He said, "Hi, Mike." He said, "Here, you want to give me a hand with this?" And he reaches inside. And he comes out with two big cardboard boxes. And he handed one to me. And then he picked up the other one. I stood there kind of dumbfounded for a minute because they were full of canned goods and non-perishable items and toothbrushes and dish soap, the kind that not dish soap, but I mean soap to wash your dishes with. I seem to remember a bag of clothespins or something. And I looked at it and I said, what is this for? And he said, "Well, it's for you and your family, Mike." And I said, wait, there's been a mistake. I can still hear myself saying that half a century later. There's been a mistake. And he said, that's okay. Here, I'll put my box on the front porch for you, and you can take it upstairs later. So he did, and I put my big box down. He got in his Ford, and he see you Sunday, and he drove away. And I sat there on that front porch and cried because I knew that everybody in the church knew that I was one of the, I and my family were one of the recipients of canned goods and non-perishables. My darling young one, I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard.
lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
So, Randy in Seoul, South Korea, writes regarding the canned food story. Marge Simpson prayed to God to intercede on Homer's behalf when the nuke plant was about to melt down. She prayed, "And the next time there's a canned food drive for the poor, I'll give something good instead of old lima beans and pumpkin mix." Ah! All right. When are we going to do a moment with Bob? We'll do the moment with Bob at the bottom of the next hour. Let's do some phone calls right now, as promised, starting with John. Bishop John in West Covina, listening on KTLK. Are you a real bishop?
I'm a real bishop. I'm with the Eastern Orthodox Churches.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Well, how do I call you Your Holiness, or?
No, that would be a patriarch or pope.
Oh, I see.
John's fine, you know.
John, all right. Hi, John.
I'm a big fan of yours. Yes, I know you're an atheist, and you know what? That's fine with me. I love what you stand for with social justice and with standing up for people who don't have a voice. And for that, you and I are very much aligned, because part of my job deals with a lot of the homeless, a lot of the hungry, and a lot of the people who are dejected in our society. And, you know, when you were talking about when you were a kid with your pastor, I grew up a lot like you did.
Oh, yeah?
And I can remember as a kid, the Salvation Army coming to my house. And the guy was trying not to get caught. He came early in the morning. And, you know, being a kid, I didn't have enough sense to not know to sleep in. And I heard some commotion on the front porch. And the guy was slipping some toys and some food. And the only way I knew who he was on the car. It had the Salvation Army on it. And
yeah,
he tried to get out of there real quietly. So we have a lot in common, my friend.
Yeah, that's real traumatic stuff for a kid when you don't know. I mean, we understood we were poor. When I was a kid, there was no welfare as we know it now, or as we knew it in the 70s and 80s and part of the 90s. But what my parents had to apply for at one time was what they called relief. How's that for a word? Plus, the government used to give out commodity food. They would give out eggs, cheese, butter, flour, and
powdered milk.
Yeah, and powdered milk. And I can remember when they started giving out white bricks of margarine, and it had a little yellow capsule, and you would put the white brick of margarine in a big mixing bowl and break the capsule into it, and then take your fingers, really, and mush it all up until it all turned yellow. And that was back when the Dairy Association was so strong, they wouldn't allow margarine to be yellow. You could sell, for fear that people would confuse it with butter. Please!
Oh, my gosh.
But, those are weird things for a kid to go through. But, you know, the old saying, Bishop John, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So,
well, you know, one of the areas where you and I might really be aligned on is, well, one of the things I can't stand is when you go to get fed and you have to sit through a prayer service, or you have to claim a faith that you may or may not have.
Yeah.
Because if you have to pay for the food with your dignity, the price is too damn high.
That's true.
And,
that's very true.
You know, and I wanted to call and thank you for what you do. And I also wanted to get that poor list from you. Where could I find that? Because I really
you know,
that.
I will try to figure out a way to, somebody emailed it to me, so I don't have a website, but you might be able to find it if you do a Google search. The guy who wrote it apparently is named, I think his last name is Scalzi, Scalzi, I think. Hold on just a second here, let me see.
Also, your screener has my information. He was so shocked that a bishop was calling that he went to our diocesan website and everything. So he has all my contact and email information that he can email it to me.
Well, if you do a Google, it says published by John Scalzi, Scalzi, and it's titled Being Poor. And you just might be able to locate it through Google.
John's, hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mike. I did find the link. I'll be happy to email it to him. I got his email address here.
Oh, there you go, Bishop John.
Hey, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. You know what? You're good for this country. You have a lot of heart, and you stand up for what a lot of things that I believe is just really right on. And so I'm with you. I'm with you.
Well, that's very kind. I appreciate you checking in, Bishop John. Take care, all right?
You too.
All right.
Good blessings to you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
Are you now going to explode into a pillar of fire?
No, but maybe I should just go ahead and chuck the atheism and try to find some kind of...
Well, someone believes in you, even if you don't believe in him.
Just chuck the atheism and try to find... I'm just kidding. That was kind of Bishop John to call. It was very kind. Another John calling from Indianapolis, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, John.
Hey, how are you? This is calling from Indianapolis. You're from Indiana. We lovingly refer to it as Middle Finger of the South.
What do you call it?
The Middle Finger of the South.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just heard that the other day. When I heard you talking about going on sabbatical, I guess I can kind of echo something of what the previous caller said. Kind of distraught, you speak a lot of truth to people, and I can tell you here in Indiana, which is something I've never seen before in my lifetime, mm-hmm. Even lifelong Republicans, people who are typically not involved, are very involved in this. And the whispers are not that I'm going to secretly vote for McCain. The whispers are I'm going to secretly vote for Obama. I work at the state building. Mm-hmm. I hear this from people all the time, people high up in the administration where I work. My father-in-law, who's never voted Democrat, has already voted for Barack. So the great thing about this current election is that it's finally exposed real issues, and I just want to really encourage you to keep being out there and telling the truth, and people hear it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that about Indiana. I grew up in Ohio, and I never thought too much about Indiana. It wasn't until I...
No one does.
It wasn't until I got older that I realized that Southern Indiana was Klan country, and the only thing I knew about Indiana was I had an uncle who was in World War II, and he was severely wounded in combat, and he spent an awful lot of time at the Veterans Hospital in Fort Wayne. And when I was a little kid, my mother and I used to take a Greyhound bus over to visit my uncle. He was my mother's brother. But he had he'd been hit by either an artillery shell or shrapnel from an artillery shell, and it crushed one of his hips. So he spent a lot of time in Fort Wayne. And the only other thing I knew about Indiana was the Indianapolis 500 when I was a kid growing up. I used to listen every summer to that Memorial Day to that race. So it's
walking distance to the track.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be damned. Well, thanks for checking in, John.
Well, please keep it up, and there's a lot more people on our side than you know.
Well,
that'll be fine.
Yeah, that'll be good. I hope that's true. Thanks, John. Appreciate your call. Yeah, I hope a lot of white folk who would never admit to a pollster, I don't know why, maybe they think there's some kind of a file being built on white people who are going to vote for a black man. But I hope there are an awful lot of white people who can get over that. I get a double sense on this. I get a sense a lot of people are starting not to see Barack Obama's color anymore. I said that a couple of, when was that, Kathy? A month or so ago, that all of a sudden I found myself, I'm a product of this country. I'm a product of a racist upbringing. And, I carry a lot of racism around with me that I have to fight constantly. But I mentioned several weeks back that all of a sudden, when I hear him, giving a speech, if I'm listening to CNN or listening to MSNBC, not really watching, he sounds like somebody who has some ideas that appeal to me. I understand. I know what I've said about him. I don't think he's a liberal. I really don't. I don't know that this country will ever elect a liberal again. Canada can't elect a liberal. Mexico can't elect a liberal. Why should we be able to? It just that may be something gone away, just like real conservatives don't exist anymore. What you have nowadays are moderates like Barack Obama and Nazis like the Republican Party. That's pretty much what we're stuck with. But when I hear Barack Obama I don't hear, I don't get an image of an African American or an American of color or any whatever the current euphemism is for somebody has African heritage. You know, I hear somebody who's that I can relate to, and I hope a lot of white people have reached that point. That would be remarkable. I know a lot of young people have reached that point, and but I'm talking about us. In that, in the baby boom generation, who are stuck with what was handed to us as a generation. I'm not talking about individuals. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about white people as a group. You know what we're stuck with. You know what we're what some of us, millions of us, have been trying to overcome. So I hope that's true. Thanks, John. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Your host for a Peance Friance future, it's Mike Malloy.
What? Why are you playing the most depressing song that the boss ever wrote?
Well, I don't know. It's been a real depressing kind of show.
Well, it has not.
Talking about...
It's been uplifting.
Having to... Boxes of food left out.
That's a good thing.
Starving kittens and...
You are so middle class, sometimes you just make me scream.
Hey, I had to borrow a friend's bicycle one time when my flat tire hurt. It was a sad day.
You go ahead.
About it, but I might start crying.
You go ahead and laugh. You go ahead. Seriously, when Kathy and I, you know, when she, after she stalked me for about 6 months and I finally went out with her, and, you know, you get to that point in a relationship where you start telling each other your stories.
And you start saying, hey, can I borrow $20?
Yeah, I did. Then I wanted to borrow some money from you. But when I started telling her stories of my childhood, she just sat there with this shocked look on her face. Like, I've read about stuff like that, but I didn't know it really happened to real people. No, Kathy, bless her heart. You know, she was lucky enough to have been brought up at very solidly middle class. Her mother is a professional. Her dad is a professional. He's a professor. Her mother is a speech pathologist. So she was brought up very middle class. But I
had to wait a whole week one time to get the new David Bowie CD.
Yeah, I guess it was an album.
That was painful.
Well, you go ahead. You just make fun of us poor folk. But I'll tell you what, when you married me, there was some pretty stressful times there. So it wasn't all in childhood. But you see, the thing, and I tried to tell Kathy this, you don't marry somebody whose career is radio. You don't do that. Unless you're a real masochist or you're lucky enough to marry Sean Hannity. because it's the kind of job, working in radio, it's like working in a factory in Detroit in the 70s. When the paychecks came, they came fine. But you always knew at some point it was going to be a layoff or you're going to get fired or whatever. And that's the way it's always been with the radio. I should have stayed with CNN. But no.
They've all been fired.
Well, yeah. Well, all my cohort, you know, I started CNN 3 years after it went on the air. All those people are now retired. Are forced out because they were getting too old. But anyway, no, I don't think stories of growing up poor are depressing. They're hell when you're experiencing it. They really are. But you know what's worse than being a child and being poor? Is being a parent and knowing that you can't provide for your children, or you can't, you know, I read something today in, of all places, USA Today. Don't ask me how I came across USA Today, Kathy. Please don't, because you and I both think that paper sucks. But I was reading about the new stats on homeless people in this country, and it is accelerating. I mean, it's worse right now than it was in the 80s. During the Reagan years, the last time we had a massive train wreck, economic train wreck like this. But the number of homeless families with children, Jesus God. And, you know, we're spending $1.2 or $2.1 trillion to bail out these goddamn banks and investment houses and these corporate fascist pigs. And the money, the decision was made by people like Paulson and Bernanke, who are up to their necks in the slime and the slop of murderous capitalism. The decision was made to give the money to the corporations, to the gamblers, to the casino owners, the people who milked Wall Street like a dead cow. These sons of bitches and the families, kids and moms and dads, who are struggling. And you know what happens in such situations like this. Domestic violence just skyrockets. Juvenile delinquency, can we still use that term? That skyrockets. Drug abuse skyrockets. Alcoholism. Crime starts to go up. That's one thing about the Clinton years. Crime damn near disappeared because everybody had a job. Jesus God, this is the part that is just... It's real hard for me anyway, and I'm sure for you, gentle listener, to know about this, to know what's happening, and not feel it just crunch right into your solar plexus. In the area that we live, you know, I can walk out our front door and walk... Maybe a mile. I walk just under 4 miles almost every day, the days that I'm not swimming. And within a mile from my house, from the front door up to the railroad tracks, right, Kathy? That's exactly 1 mile. I can walk past 10 houses that have been repossessed by the lending institutions that handle the financing. And, you know, we've watched this happen here in our little section of the North Georgia Mountains over the past, it's been about the past 9 months this has happened. And I can remember when it first started happening, and the banks or the real estate companies would put out signs that would say, repossessed home. And I would take the damn thing down and throw it in the nearest ditch. You know, put up a goddamn for sale sign, but get that garbage, you know, repossess my ass. Repossessed by who? By investors in China, in the Soviet Union, in Great Britain? What do you mean repossessed? These are people who had their homes stolen from them. But I digress. All right, stick around. I'm sorry. I just got way off topic here. What was the topic? Oh, that's right. 41 shots. American Skin. The boss's book about Amadou Diallo. Was it about Diallo? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova Emma. We'll be right back. It is 7 past the hour. There's a website I want you to check out real quick. Architects and Engineers, AE911Truth.org. AE911Truth.org. All right? Just go check it out. Take a look. They have a petition there. They are looking for signatures on the petition. They're not looking for money. Just it's AE911Truth.org. And the AE is Architects and Engineers, I believe. AE911Truth.org. Check out that website. I just got an email from a friend who said check it out, and I checked it out. You check it out. AE911Truth.org. One more thing about Cuba discovering this huge, huge pool of oil in their territorial waters. This says Cuba may not have featured prominently in the current race for the White House, but political observers believe that America's undiminished thirst for oil will eventually force Washington to reconsider its hostility toward Havana. With the 50th anniversary of the Castro Revolution coming up next year, the news on the oil front provides a much-needed boost for the regime, now led by the old man's brother, Raul, and yet another ferocious battering, after yet another ferocious battering by the elements last month, Cuba's long-suffering citizens will rejoice at the prospect of improvements in the quality of their daily life, even if that is not quite just around the corner. As a favorite Cuban joke goes, the most visible failings of the revolution to date are breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Can you imagine how Cuba would have flourished under Fidel Castro and socialism if we had not driven the Cuban revolution directly into the arms of the bad old Soviet Union? Huh? Oh, never mind. That's might as well be talking to the wind with that. All right, back to your phone calls. Kathy is calling from Madison, listening on the mic. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Say, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the anthrax letters.
Yeah.
I spoke with you last week when you were talking about a couple of listeners emailing you
mm-hmm.
the federal articles.
Yes. Yeah.
And I called you then, and I said, you know, maybe I'm a little crazy with the way I choose to connect the dots, and I'm wondering if this isn't yet another dot.
You know, I don't know what's going on. Are you aware that Jennifer Bruner, the Ohio Secretary of State, has been receiving death threats?
No. I'm not aware of that.
Yeah, somebody sent me a link. It's on five or six websites, news organizations reporting it. Daily Kos has something about it. Apparently, there have been an unending attempts to hack into the Secretary of State's website, and included in those attempts have been some serious death threats. It is, and then hearing about the mailing, what is it? I still haven't gotten the story because during the breaks here, I don't sit with the headphones on and listen to AP News. I get up, stretch, walk around the little studio here, but from what I'm gathering, the banking firms received white powder in the mail. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, upwards of 30. Banks had mailings, and supposedly the mailings all came from Texas.
Uh-huh.
But I find it just so suspect after what you were talking about last week with, you know, releasing the anti-venom to the anthrax, you know, and the high alert and the night, you know.
Yeah, and then this comes out.
Emergency And then this happened.
Yeah, it does look like it's coordinated. I wouldn't be surprised if it is. I don't think, though, strictly speaking, that somebody should be mailing fake powder to these banking executives. I think we ought to just go round them up, bring them out in the street, strip them all naked, because most of them are just pasty and not very attractive looking. Strip all these people naked and put dunce hats on them, like they did during the Cultural Revolution in China, in the bad old days in China in the 60s. Put dunce hats on them and parade them up and down the streets, up and down Michigan Avenue in Chicago and Broadway or Madison Avenue or Wall Street in New York. Just and make them be naked with these dunce hats that say things like, you know, I tried to destroy families and homes and savings accounts and IRAs. I am a scum-sucking capitalist pig. And just do that. And tell them, you've got your choice. Either do this or something bad will happen to you. And I think a lot of them would choose walking up and down the street naked with a dunce hat on.
Well, Mike, I'm starting to feel like I'm becoming the official conspiracy theorist for the Mike Malloy Show. And
oh, no, I've got about 300 of those. Trust me, honey.
But, I have to wonder when I'm listening to this on CNN, is this just a story that's put out there that's, not really for real, but just to lead us in the direction that,
you never know anymore, do you?
I know.
No,
you
don't.
You have no clue.
When I'm doing show prep for this program or whatever, and I'm looking at stuff, I go to all these different news sources, and I read all this stuff, and I look at it, and I have to sit here and think, Jesus, is this true? Is this a propaganda? Who did this come from? Look at all the garbage that we've discovered was pumped into media during the Bush years. Look at it. I mean, all the fake stories, all these just incredible stuff. And of course, that's the way you break down the resistance of a population so that you can move in with whatever form of totalitarianism you want to put in, whether it's communism or fascism or corporatism or whatever it is. You make them lose confidence in their ability to discern the truth, to know what the truth is.
Right.
And once you've done that, then you can inject whatever poison or fear. You can move them this way. You can move them that way. You can move them up here. You can move them down there. And achieve your goal. And this is what infuriates me. This is what, I have to tell you, this is not good. This is not good what I'm going to say. But this is what makes me want to pick up one of my guns and just hole up in this house with water and canned lima beans and just sit here and wait for some evil bastard to come. You know what I mean? It makes me crazy. Because that's not a rational response to all this.
As you said to me last week, this is making you physically sick to your stomach, just sitting and waiting and wondering when.
And the crazy part, too. The crazy part. I'm losing whatever little tenuous holds on reality that I think I've had for a long time. And I get emails from people. I get scores of emails in any given 3-4 day period where people are saying the same thing. I think I'm going crazy. Now, half of that is, we're just it's hyperbole. We're not really. But the other half of it, deep down inside, we're thinking, yeah, maybe I am. Maybe I, by God, am going nuts. I've never in my life felt the need to bar the door and sit in the attic of my house where I've got a 360-degree view of my little part of the North Georgia Mountains and sit there fully armed, Hey, Kathy, I got to go. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, I appreciate you checking in. Don't panic. Whatever you do, don't panic, he said. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Don't forget, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we have a moment with Bob. Also, Nancy in Ohio sent this to me. Jennifer Bruner, the Ohio Secretary of State, said her office has been assaulted in recent weeks by a barrage of phone calls and emails containing menacing messages and even threats of death. Last week, a suspicious package covered with threatening messages and containing an unidentified powder was mailed to the office, Bruner said. This is a Reuters news agency reporting this. And it just, where this is coming from. I mean, you don't know the individuals, but you know where this is coming from. Let's go back to your phone calls. I think this is the co-host of Ring of Fire, along with Mike Papantonio. Is this Robert Kennedy Jr.?
Yeah, hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Listening on XM tonight, huh?
Yes, I got XM radios. I retrofitted all of our family cars. I have six kids. And
yeah, I hear you.
Put them all with XM radios so we can listen to that.
How are you? How's Mike?
Good. I have a piece in this week's Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah?
Talk to you about voter suppression by the Republican Party.
Yeah, you and Greg Palast. That's plus the thing in the Nation magazine. I was reading along with who's the cartoonist? I'm embarrassed. I'm drawing a blank. Tom Tolles. You and Greg Palast and Tom Tolles have a very interesting.
Well, we have a comic book out. It's called How to Steal Back Your Vote.
Yeah.
StealBackYourVote.org that people can get to make sure that their vote is not suppressed or stolen, and to take defensive action.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we wrote about in kind of the long version of our piece was about this 8-year long campaign by Karl Rove and Alberto Gonzalez to create an illusion of that there's actual voter fraud, individual.
Right.
Fraud going on in this country in order to gin up an hysteria that would justify the erection of all these impediments to allowing people to vote, mainly black people, Hispanic people, and Native Americans and other minorities who are targeted by all of these new obstacles that are included in the Help America Vote Act.
And don't you love the title, Help America Vote Act?
Well, it was originally, I mean, that's how it was sold, of course. When, you know, they're experts in selling that stuff. And the act was passed by a Republican Congress, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president. And it was written, the worst portions of it were written by Jack Abramoff and Bob May, who was, as you probably remember, he's the congressman from the district where Mr. Diebold, who owns the Diebold Company, comes from in Ohio.
Right.
Two of them are now both serving jail terms. They created this act that is just, it's a formula for resurrecting Jim Crow in this country, for dividing all kinds of ways that prohibit black people from voting. But the recent news that they've tried to, during the debate, John McCain said that the activities, he became part of this process by saying that the activities of Acorn were a momentous national hoax, and that they were one of the greatest threats to the fabric, of threatening the fabric of our democracy.
That was such an astonishing statement. And if anybody, McCain should know better. McCain has been keynote speaker at their conventions. Robert, you know that as well as I do.
Yes, I do. And it's a total lie. There's not a single. There's not one case, proven case, that anybody signed up by Acorn ever voted twice, ever committed voter fraud.
Right.
There was certainly registration fraud committed, but the registration fraud was committed against Acorn. Acorn was the victim. And just so that your listeners know, because I know you know this, Acorn hired about 8,000 people to register new voters. And some of those people were not completely honest. And they figured out, some of them figured out it was hard work to register voters. So they wanted, they were being paid by the voters that, by the registrations that they brought in, the signatures that they brought in. So some of them just went to the phone book and started copying names down. And other ones would go to people on the street and register them, and maybe register the same guy 15, 16, 17 times. And other ones would just make up names, like Mickey Mouse or Tony Paul Beck. Now, the illusion, and that's bad, and they got paid by Acorn, and they got, you know, they ripped off Acorn. But did they harm our national democracy? No. Why not? Because none of those people are ever going to vote twice. If you're, there's nothing illegal about registering 17 times.
Hey, hold on. Bobby, hold on a second. I've got to take a break here. And we'll come back and pick this up on the other side of the break. Can you hold a second? Yeah, I think he can. Okay. What is really weird, I'm looking at the rebroadcast of Rachel Maddow's program on MSNBC, and there's Bobby Kennedy Jr. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
George W. and Cheney couldn't win without a slimy trip. To Washington they had to run. States' rights weren't that much fun. Don't you hate that crap? They just keep lying all the time. They just keep lying all the time.
Now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, Bobby Kennedy Jr. and Greg Pallas have an article you should read in the current issue of Rolling Stone. Also, the most recent, not the issue that you got in your mail today, but last week's issue of The Nation has a very interesting section put together by Tom Tolles, Bobby Kennedy Jr., and Greg Pallas. And we're talking with Bobby now about Steal Back Your Vote. The thing that really pisses me off is the way McCain and even, let's forget McCain, I expect it from McCain now, but the way the national news media, Bobby, reports this story as if there is some sort of equivalency between
exactly, really, the story is a distraction,
right,
to distract everybody from what's really going on, which is a massive voter threat that has been orchestrated by the GOP.
Yeah.
But let me just finish making the point that I was making.
Okay,
is what a lot of people don't understand, and what nobody has reported this in the media, which is that, yeah, Fox News has been parading around these two homeless people who were allegedly registered 17 times and 70 times, respectively. Well, there's nothing illegal about registering 17 times.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you can vote 17 times. The last registration is the one that counts. That's effective. That's what the law says. You can register as many times you want, and it's the last registration that's effective.
Right.
Furthermore, the Mickey Mouse is not going to show up and vote. And the people that were registered from the phone booth, the book, are not going to show up and vote unless they're already registered to vote. So there was no extra votes or additional votes. There's none of the what used to go on about with the dead people voting, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
This is all about somebody ripping off, stealing money from Acorn. It's not about somebody defrauding our election system. And furthermore, Acorn is the one who reported the voter deregistration fraud.
Sure.
The reason that they reported it is because it is illegal if Acorn gets a registration that it suspects is shaky, it is not allowed to throw that registration out.
Yeah.
So, under the law. Now, why is that the law? Well, this is why it's the law, because the Republicans for years would go into black neighborhoods and they would open registration desks where they pretended to be impartial registrars, and they would register voters. And then they would take those registrations, put them in a box, and throw the box in a dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
And so those African-American voters who thought they were registered would show up at the polls on election day to vote. And they'd say, I registered with the guy in the street. And they said, and the precinct guys would say, well, we don't have any record of that.
Right, exactly, exactly.
So the Congress passed a law that said you can't do that. If mm-hmm. you have... Even if you, there's no reason, once somebody fills out an application, no matter how crazy it is, if it has Mickey Mouse's name on it or Donald Duck's, you cannot legally throw it away. But Acorn looked at all of these, and they said, wait a second, there's a lot of these that have problems. And they flagged them. They put little red stickers on them.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that Acorn flagged, that now Fox News and all of the hate radio jocks, the right-wing hate radio jocks, are now brandishing about saying, oh, look, this is a huge threat to our democracy. And that is the basis for John McCain's absurd and reprehensible claim during the debate that our democracy was now under threat.
Right.
And
well, you know, Bobby, it's not just Fox. Also, other elements of so-called mainstream media, including CNN, have been reporting this as if there is some equivalency between the accusations against Acorn and the massive electoral theft that has gone on in the past three national elections, 2006, well, the past three, and I'm sure there's going to be an attempt this time. And that's the part that's so infuriating. If media, and by that I mean television, would report this without the equivalency, report it for what it is, so that people would understand what the hell is going on here.
All right, now I'm going to tell you something, which is this, that in 2004, we know that there were 2.7 million Democratic voters, mainly Democratic voters, whose votes were not counted, who were legitimate voters who cast their votes and then had their votes disappear.
Right.
And they were disappeared for a number of reasons. Like if they cast provisional ballots, a third of the ballots, provisional ballots can be thrown out at the discretion of the voting officials. So a third of the provisional ballots cast nationwide were simply put in dumpsters. And it's black people who disproportionately vote on provisional, are given provisional ballots. And I can explain why that happens, the algorithms that dictate that result. But furthermore, there was a million of those 2.7 people voters whose votes were thrown out were black. A lot of them were thrown out because of spoilage. Spoilage means that if the machine, for some reason, cannot read your ballot, the electors can throw it out. Now, they may not be able to read it because it's a hanging chad, or because it's illegible, or because you spilled coffee on it, or because it's torn. It confuses the machine. The thing is that some machines are more easily confused than others. And the older, antiquated, archaic, and broken-down machines go to the poorest neighborhoods,
sure,
and those happen to be black neighborhoods. So the United States Election Commission, which is a government agency, nonpartisan, has found that as to spoilage, black people disproportionately, by a 9-to-1 margin, that black voters are more likely to have their votes discarded as spoiled. 9-to-1 margin, 900% more likely. So now people talk about the Bradley effect.
Mm-hmm.
The Bradley effect is that this noticeable, this discernible difference between the exit polls, which shows that the Democrat, black Democrat, won the election,
mm-hmm,
and the final tally, which says he didn't. Now, Sunday morning gas bags and, you know, CNN and Wolf Blitzer and all of these people will say, well, it's because white people go into the voting booth and they pretend and they want to say that they voted for the black person, but they can't bring themselves to do it. So then they step out and lie to the pollster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a bunch of nonsense. What's really happening is that those people really did vote for the black candidate, and their votes were discarded. And a million votes were discarded in 2004, black votes. But the Bradley effect doesn't just affect black candidates. It affects Democratic candidates.
Right.
You cannot, you will not find it affecting Republican candidates, but you find it affecting Democratic candidates. And, in fact, you know, what we saw in 2004 where John Kerry won the exit polls,
mm-hmm.
was 4 points ahead in the exit polls in Ohio, and he ended up 2 points behind.
Well, let me ask you something, because, yeah, what you're talking about, Bobby, we talk about a lot on this program, and we're just about out of time here. What, how much more of this can go on before there is a rebellion or a revolution or a revolt? You know, pick the word. I'm not talking about necessarily about people taking up guns, but I'm talking about people who finally realize that the basic franchise in this country, the one person, one vote thing, has been totally corrupted and destroyed. How much longer before people react?
Well, you know, it would only take about a week if the media, you know, if the corporate-controlled media would actually start, you know, looking at these issues, and if we had any investigative reporters left, and, you know, if we had like serious people getting up and saying, wait a second, there's a problem here. Is the assumption that the Bradley effect is the result of this, you know, this kind of national psychic deceit? Or is there actually a mechanical explanation for it?
Right.
That, you know, which is already out there for everybody to see. We know, according to the official reports, the U.S. Election Commission, that 2.7 million people voted and didn't have their votes counted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were discarded because they voted on provisional ballots, because their votes were discarded because for one reason or another. They had the wrong address. They had, you know, all of these reasons that have been constructed for discarding votes that are contrived. But, you know, again, I think most Americans believe, because they're being told this by respected people, by, you know, these avuncular, you know, bearded, credible, you know, people like Wolfowitzer and, you know, Lou Dobbs and all the other ones. Well, you know, there's this Bradley effect out there. They're not being told.
Right. All right. Well, let me mention to the audience, go to steelbackyourvote.org, steelbackyourvote.org, and you can download the full-color investigative comic book written by Bobby and Greg Palast for free. And also, I said Tom Tolles, my bad. The graphic is by Ted Rall, Lucas Kettner, and Trouble Town's Lloyd Dangle. But Ted Rall is the artist, and I said Tom Tolles. No offense to either one of those guys, because they're great artists. Also, go to rollingstone.com and read this article that Bobby and Greg have put up there. And, Bobby, we have got to – but before I go, I've got a minute. How's your uncle doing?
He's good. I mean, you know, I spent a lot of time with him this summer at the Cape, and he's lost none of his mental acuity. He's lost none of his lucidity or his humor. He's, you know, quick and smart, and that's just lost nothing. He's a little slower at getting around.
Yeah.
But, you know, he sailed every day, and he raced, and he won his races, and he's, you know, it's really a miracle. It's really, really a miracle. And,
well,
you know,
he is, there is no question. I think a couple of people have referred to him as the Lion of the Senate, and he is. Bobby, I got to leave it there. Thanks so much for calling the program tonight. Say hi, if you would, to both Greg and Mike Papantonio for me, and keep up the work. Keep up the great work you're doing. Thanks, Bobby. I appreciate it. Take care, okay?
You too.
All right. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
It was getting mighty slim, and those black robes couldn't hide your Bush T-shirt there inside. You made the man with a fewer votes win. Congratulations, George. Well, it's all bought and paid for. The history books will have to write you in. Well, maybe you can pass a law so the rest of us can all see how the man...
Flying Monkey Ride Blues, here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Well, we're just about out of time. 9 minutes before the hour, our moment with Bob will be, we'll do it tomorrow night. I think it certainly makes sense to check out what RFK Jr. was talking about, what Bobby and Greg Palace have put together, and I just wish that there was something other than the standard answer that I would give, or Bobby Kennedy gave, or Greg Palace would give, or you would give, or Kathy would give, to the question, you know, how much more of this are we going to take before something really serious happens? I don't know the answer to that, and I guess I would have said the same thing that Bobby said, or that you would say, or that anybody would say. How much longer can we take this? Well, until it's reported by the media for what it really is. But even at that, on that level, you know, it's more of the frustration when you have a Secretary of State, a Democrat, whose life is threatened because she filed a petition with the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, to stop what the Republicans were trying to do with all these new registered voters. And the fact is, I saw something on one of the network news programs tonight, of these millions of new registered voters, something like 87% of them are Democrats. That is what is going to decide the election, are these first-time voters, if they go. And Kathy and I went to one of the, into Decatur, was it Decatur, Georgia today, to take a shot at early voting. And we went at a little before 10 o'clock in the morning, and there was a two-hour line. It's incredible, of white folk and black folk, two-hour lineup. Because we asked one of the precinct workers, you know, we couldn't stay, so we're going to try again tomorrow. But the early voting that they've been doing here in Georgia, how long has that been going on? For about 10 days? 2 weeks? It's been going on for 2 weeks. And every single day, something like, I hope I've got this right, but I think something like 400,000 Georgians have already voted. And it just continues. It just continues. And if that's the way it has to be done, to totally overwhelm these fascist little sons of bitches, these religious freaks in the Republican Party, then let's do it this way. Let's do it this way. At least this way is honorable. It's in keeping with the Constitution. It's decent. It is proper. It is American. It is freedom-loving. Everything that the Republicans and the conservatives and the neo-fascists are not.
I did see a report, though. I want to say it was on CNN, that, and I think, of course, it was Florida, because it's always Florida, that some people were trying to early vote on those damn touchscreen voting machines, and it was flipping their votes for McCain.
Yeah, that was, I think, West Virginia. I have that story right here. You see the stack I didn't get to tonight? It's right in here. So we'll try to get to it tomorrow.
And the Republican election officials there were trying to say, well, it was voter error because their finger was just not quite on the button correct, right on the space. It had to be right in the middle of the square. So it was their fault.
Look, the program's almost over, and I can't let that rage bubble up again. Like Sarah Palin or Michelle Bachmann or some Republican poll worker saying their finger wasn't on the screen.
And didn't you say you got some hate mail you're going to share with everybody? Wasn't your life just threatened by some Bachmann supporter?
Oh yeah, well that's all right. That's all right. Because you know my old saying, Kathy. I've said this before. If you want ass, you got to bring ass. And it always tickles me when somebody threatens me. I've been threatened so many times. That's one of the reasons I carry. As you know, that's one of the reasons I carry a weapon. Hey, thanks to the crew tonight, Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wiff, along with our executive producer, Kathy Bay, for the program. And The schedule got blown up when Bobby Kennedy called in, and that's cool because what he had to say, I think, is important. I don't think it's too different from what listeners of this program understand. But go to RollingStone.com, go to StealBackYourVote.org, and see what you can do, because there are some things we can do short of wild, you know, bloody resistance that may come, but there are some things now that can be done. Hey, listen, thanks for hanging out with me tonight. We appreciate it very much here at the Malloy Program. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.